to the Triple Helix podcast.
I'm really pleased to have a representative from the Toucan Rescue Ranch in Costa Rica with me today. Ana Maria Viada Rosales, did I say it correctly?
That is correct. Nice to meet you.
It's great to have you on the Triple Helix podcast, Ana. You're the veterinarian supervisor at the ranch. Could you tell me a little bit about your background experience and how you ended up in Costa Rica at Toucan Rescue Ranch?
Well, I am a veterinarian. I graduated in Mexico. I've been working in private zoo collections since I graduated. Then I decided to do a master in conservation medicine in Australia. And when I came back to Mexico, I decided to do an internship. In the meantime, I could get a job. So I ended up working for Toucan Rescue Ranch for 6 months. And then after that, they offered me a position. And since then, I'm here.
That sounds great. I mean, I've done a little looking around at what goes on at the ranch, and it's wonderful work. I've been to Costa Rica once. I can't wait to return. You mentioned conservation medicine. Was that the category?
Yes, it is basically a combination of clinical work and One Health. It involves working with many other people, like from biology and medicine, and focusing in not just the health of the animals, but the health of the environment and the health of the people.
Well, you really put your finger on exactly what I wanted to ask you about, because I noticed that that's the philosophy of the ranch, and I was really impressed with the holistic unity of that idea, because I think without humans considering everything is interconnected, then we miss the point, our place in nature and our responsibility.
Yeah, of course, we have a responsibility, but also we have to be more open-minded. It's very easy to think about conservation inside your house on a very fancy sofa with a very amazing phone. And then when you go to the field, you know that you have to make people feel comfortable with the environment in order for them to care.
Right. A lot of us are slacktivists, right? But I feel, you know, where you're coming from. How do you go about inspiring people or educating them and trying to get them more aware?
I think is very, very important. Inspiring the people and educating the people, I think, is the backbone of conservation, too. If they feel attracted to them, to the animals, and they want to learn more, and you teach them more on how to treat them, how to work with the environment and with wildlife, that's going to be what changes the view of all the world.
So I'm guessing you have visitors from all over the world visiting the ranch, and thus you have an opportunity to touch people from all over?
That is right. We actually have a map on the marketing office where you can put where you're from. And I think we have had people from all over every continent, actually.
Yeah, very cool and positive. So one of the main attractions in Costa Rica, of course, are the rainforests and just the general environmental ethic, where I know 25% of the country is conserved from development.
It is. I think Costa Rica is one of the countries that have the most national protected services and areas.
Yet in your work, you're experiencing kind of the fallout or the bleed over of civilization encroaching upon natural habitats.
Yes. Most of the animals we receive are victims of human-animal conflict, and that will be electrocution, dog attacks, hit by cars. Only, I will say, 1% of the animals we receive, they have natural causes. All the rest is definitely human-animal conflict.
Well, that's a really complicated issue. So the population keeps growing and people want more and more land and territory and bigger houses. And I wonder how is your community or region dealing with that particular issue? Because I'm imagining that local authorities or politicians or those running various governmental departments must have a concern for preserving wildlife, yet they have to cater to human desires too. So how does that all interrelate? I know that's a complicated question.
It is very, very complicated because you have by one side, MINAE, that is the government part that is in charge of taking care of the animals, are working, always overworking, always doing a little bit more, but at the same time, they're a little bit underfunded. it makes very complicated. We have found that people are getting more and more involved and they want to help more, and they're the ones that are call us and bring animals, or they talk to Minai. Right now we're working with the SPH, that is the company in Heredia that works with electricity and the power lines, and they're always asking us where the animals come from and the area so they can work on those places and fix the power lines so less animals are getting affected. So it is difficult, it is complicated because you see some parts of the government trying to fix the problem, but at the same time, the humans keep encroaching on the habitat and people are trying to get more involved and help, but at the same time, they're still building their houses. It's very difficult to find like a mid ground.
Always, but I salute what you're doing. I'm enthusiastic about your focus. You mentioned the electrocution or electric burns from the power lines for various species that you help. Of course, we know about Sloth, I think was his name, Tiesto,
Yes.
who you helped. But could you give me just a brief overview of animals who are burned by electrocution and contact with electric wires that you work with?
If you go to every rescue center in Costa Rica, you have all the animals that use the canopy for transportation, like monkeys, tamanduas, sloths. They're the ones that get the most affected. Tucan Rescue Ranch works mainly with sloths. We very rarely receive monkeys, but there are several other rescue centers that work with monkeys. We have been receiving other animals like hawks and owls that when they're flying around, they crash into the power lines and their injuries are far more severe than in mammals. But yeah, that's the main problem. We have a sloth specifically that is traveling through the canopy and he wants to go faster from one point to another, they start using the power lines as highways. So most of the time they don't have issues, but whenever they get electrocuted, that's when they get to us.
I see. Well, that's really tragic. I know everyone generally loves sloths and monkeys and all of the exotic animals we see, but we don't know very much about them except the best known kind of stereotype about how slow they are and that sort of thing. Can you tell me a little bit about what is the personality of a sloth? How do they communicate? What sort of being are they?
They're quite funny. I find them very interesting because they seem to be very quiet, but when you start to know them, you see that they have very different personalities. To me, sloths are very aggressive. They can be very, very dangerous. But I think it's also because by the time they come to my care or to the ranch, they're in pain and they're angry, so they're difficult to handle. But when you see them in the wild, they're far away on the tree. They're very chill. They're very pura vida. They just move on a mission. If they don't have to go to the bathroom to eat or have a partner, they will just not move. They will just stay there for days and they just eat and go back into their spot when they're sleeping.
They must have the lowest pulse rate of any mammal.
It is very difficult to put an IV on a sloth.
But you say that, so they must be pretty strong if they're difficult to handle when they're injured and angry.
Yes. Well, for handling an adult sloth, we need a minimum of 3 to 4 people.
Wow. Well, how big is an adult sloth, roughly?
Roughly between 4 to 6 kilos. We have very weird sloths. We have one sloth that is up to 8 kilos, and he's massive. But usually the ones that we receive at the clinic are between 4 to 6.
That's interesting in itself. And I guess I'm going to go back to sloth personalities. Do they communicate through sound? Do they make noises or have different behaviors you can interpret?
They're mostly very silent. They only make noises, for example, the three-finger sloth, they make noises when they are in heat. The females make a very high-pitched noise scream that calls the males, and the males can go miles and miles just to find this female that is screaming. The two-finger sloth, they're a little bit more silent, and when they're doing noises, they're either for aggression or when they're scared, which is very, very uncommon, but it's also very terrifying because it's a very deep growl that they make.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to seek that out online. Well, that's all really interesting. Just a couple other quick questions about sloths. How ancient are they? And how long is the longevity of a typical sloth?
Well, that's a difficult one. They're very old species. They used to be the ground sloths, the massive sloths that were prehistoric, and they at some point started evolving into animals that live on the trees. On the other hand, the tree-toed sloth, they spend most of the time in the trees since forever. And even though they both got adapted in living in the trees, they have millions of years of evolution in difference. And even though they're both sloths, they're completely different. About their age, sloths are very understudied. No one really knows how long they live in the wild. We're calculating that maybe 20, well, 10 to 20 years. We are not sure, but we know that in captivity, there are certain cases of sloths that have lived up to 30 to 40 years.
Wow,
but we don't really know exactly.
Pretty long lifespan. What's their role in the habitat? Where does the sloth fit in?
That's a very good question. That is being discussed by scientists, actually, because they have this species of moth that lives on their hair. So many people say that the sole purpose of the sloth is to have the moth on their hairs. They eat leaves, so they don't really eat fruits, so they don't transmit seeds. Other people say that the sole purpose is be prey for other animals. And other scientists say that having sloths also proves that the environment is healthy. So no one really knows what's exactly the important niche of sloths, because as I said, they're severely understudied. So what we know is the few things that certain people have been finding out by working with them.
Interesting stuff. Well, thanks for indulging me. What's the purpose of the sloths? It's like they're all hanging out waiting to form a ska band one day. It's like, dude, yeah, soon as I get the energy.
It could be. We always also make jokes of the sloths when they go into the clinic and we put them back in the wild. They're like, dude, you can imagine what happened to me. I went into a weird place and they took my arm.
Yeah, they like put powder on it, man. What's up?
Yeah. You know,
I thought I'd be like chill couch surfing, but no. Now, one of the topics I know we have to talk about is the electric burn on the sloth named Tiesto. And would you tell me a little bit about that incident, you know, how severe it was? My understanding is Human Biosciences sent some samples of their collagen products, which you used on him and some other things. Would you mind telling me a little about that?
Well, all electrocution burns are very severe. In his case, he had the left hand severely burned. He didn't lose the hand, so we decided to start treating with collagen and tilapia skin to try to regenerate the tissues of the hand. But he has also very severe burns on the eyes and the face. So he took around 3 to 4 months to heal the face and a lot of time to heal the hand until we started receiving the donation by Human Bioscience, which we are very, very grateful for. Until then, he was taking forever to regenerate the tissue on his hand.
I see. So the collagen, you know, helped accelerate that process.
Yeah. Right. And sloths are naturally very slow healers. They can survive with terrible wounds, but they take forever to get better. So that we were really worried that the Tiesto will be spending too much time with us.
Yeah, I mean, just terrible. I didn't realize his face and eyes had been burned. That's really sad.
But yeah, so recently we have been receiving a lot of sloths that have burns on the eyes and the face.
What was his fate? Was he eventually released back or into the wild?
Sadly, when he was starting to get trained to be moved to the release site, we found out that the internal damage he had was very severe, and we found out that the gallbladder got destroyed by the electricity. And we basically maintained him living because we were giving vitamins and hepatic protectors as part of our protocol. So he was not fit to be released.
Oh, I see. Well, it's still an amazing story. Now, question about the functionality of collagen. Were you using it in powder form or in sheet form or both?
We're using both. The powder form we're starting to use with injuries that are very deep and they're closing down but second intention and third intention. So it could go into bite wounds or electricity wounds that are very deep into the tissue, and it's very, very useful. And the chips, we're using it when we're regenerating the epidermis and the dermis.
That's interesting, but it sounds as if the collagen products could be used on almost any animal. Would you agree?
Yes. Yes, I agree. It's very, very useful. We also started using in one of the cats that the founder has, and it has been working amazingly well. It is really impressive because it doesn't make an adverse reaction. As of now, all the animals that we have used collagen on, they have been accepting the collagen very well, and we can see the injuries improving very fast and very positively. The collagen, that also helps a lot, and it's just putting, after cleaning the wound, it's just putting it in combination with an antiseptic. It's more practical. I also sent some case studies for human bioscience on the animals we have been using the collagen, just so they can see how it has worked.
That really helps.
Yeah, for sure.
How many animals do you treat a year, roughly?
A year? Oh, we receive around 2,000 animals a year.
Wow.
And that's the minimum.
That's a lot of animals. I know that you offer tours to visitors.
We do. We do offer tours to visitors right now. How are we on tours, Sarah? I don't know. Well, we're really good on tours. But we do educational walks, and that means that they go into the ranch and there's a tour guide explaining them about the story of the animals, a little bit of environmental education and conservation.
In Costa Rica, is there anything that Costa Ricans themselves can do day to day to help make the habitat safer for the wild animals from the canopy? Are there practices, things you do and don't do around your home or on the roof of your house? What can the everyday citizen do?
Well, many people, what they're doing right now is they're making bridges to make the in and out of their house a little bit better. I always talk, and I know it's a little bit controversial, talk about keeping the cats inside, the dogs also not running around, because that always affects the wildlife that runs around, because there's a lot of suburban animals living in Costa Rica. It's just a matter of knowing what animals they have on the backyard and trying to make it as friendly as possible.
I see. What other ways can people support your project?
Well, it's there are many fundraising going on. There's donation programs. I mean, the marketing people can talk about a lot. I'm visiting the ranch. There, we also offer virtual tours if you're not in Costa Rica and you still want to support us. The virtual tours is like the most important part that we have been using of because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Has the pandemic affected your work very significantly?
Yes.
How so?
Well, we have to close down our doors for a good period of time. We have to close down our internship programs and our volunteer program. And that affected us a lot because we were working with just a certain crew, which make it really, really difficult. And we were surviving with all the, just with donations, because we survived through the tourism and ecotourism. And we couldn't receive those for a good chunk of the time, and in the meantime we were still receiving animals that need to be treated.
Oh wow, that sounds like a really challenging time. So you're coming out of it now a bit, I'm assuming?
We still need to increase a little bit on our tourist program, because it has been really slow and opening very slowly, but yeah, we're finally starting to see the light out of the tunnel.
That's great. Well, people can find you at toucanrescueranch.org to learn about tours, to make donations, to learn about your mission. And I myself would love to visit next time I'm in Costa Rica, and I hope that'll be pretty soon. Well, I guess we'll close just by thanking you so much for being a guest and teaching us more about the habitat in which you work, the important work that you're doing, and how collagen was able to help a little bit in improving the lives of some of these animals.
Yeah, and thank you so much for having us. And yeah, the collagen, the donation has been amazing. It has been helping us with many of the animals that we have right now, because we have 3 slots that have been electrocuted and we're using the collagen right now on them. So we're really, really grateful. And I hope you can come visit us.
I would love to. Oh, I know what I meant to mention. I know that the company's going to be releasing some veterinarian-focused products later this year, it looks like. And the forms you've already used, and they, I think they're going to be making a foam, a spray foam. More good stuff for the animals, and I'm sure you'll be seeing some of it when it's ready.
But we're excited to see it, yeah.
Very good. Well, great meeting you, Anna. Great speaking to you, and thanks to you and all of your staff for making this possible.
Thanks for inviting us again. It's been a blast.
Yeah, likewise. So much more I'd like to know. But be well, best of luck in your work, and we'll be in touch.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining the Triple Helix podcast, presented by Human Biosciences. Your host was Dan Bernard.